Advertising Week is proud to present Great Minds, People and Culture, a podcast dedicated to exploring the art of intentional leadership during times of change. The goal of Great Minds, People and Culture is to provide our audience with practical strategies, reliable data, and tangible advice as we look to empower leaders seeking to make a positive impact. Each 30-minute episode of People and Culture is a deep dive into the intricacies of effective leadership, featuring insightful conversations with experts and thought leaders. Great Minds, People and Culture premieres September 2023 and will be available through your podcast store of choice and at advertisingweek.com. Theoretically, creativity is an economic multiplier that can boost business and drive sales and make money. Easy, right? But then, when it comes to paying for it, all gets a little bit more complicated. This session from Advertising Week APAC 2023 opens up a dialogue about the value of creativity and how it's perceived in marketing departments and agencies. What's really affecting marketers' budgets? And what's the impact of treating creative as a cost rather than as an investment? Find out in LBB Presents, How Do We Put a Value on Creativity?
So my name's Toby Hemming. I'm the APAC MD of LBB, Little Black Book. We are the world's biggest publication for commercial creativity. So I like to get the plug in there. I'd like to introduce the next of the panel, then I'll talk through what we're going to do. So to my left here is Hamish Stewart, who's the National ECD of Experience at CHEP, who has quite a long, varied career. Agencies including M&C and RGA, but also importantly, I think for this, was the partner of independent agency GHO. Correct?
Got correct.
That right, thank you. Next is Laura Aldington, who is the co-founder of Supermassive and previously the CEO of Host of Us. So Laura's been in the news today, so congratulations for that.
Thank you.
And next here on the end is Katie Rigg-Smith, who's the head of strategy for WPP and was previously CEO of Mindshare for 10 years, I think. Is that right? Cool. Welcome. Well, thanks everyone for joining us. So look, what we're going to talk about today is the value of creativity, which is, I think, is an interesting topic. So obviously, you know, we are here in the advertising industry, creativity is king, etc. But, you know, as somebody once said, creative without commerce, great as that is just art. So we're going to try and discuss the complex relationship between the power of ideas and how we can monetize that as an industry. Because I think there's an idea around genie in a bottle of creativity, etc. Can you lay it down? But actually, you know, we are a business and we need to do that. You know, with that, there is the answer of what value do we add to our clients and what's the relationship there? How do we best communicate ourselves as the advertising agency, etc. So look, the first thing I've got here is a question. It's a quote from Publicis, their CEO, Arthur Sadoun, in their Q2 results that came out very recently. And he said, creativity is not accretive to growth. It was a word we had to look up, but it's synonymous with, or it's not something that drives necessarily growth, which is a massively surprising statement from somebody who has some of the most iconic creative agencies as part of their portfolio. So I think it's a good place to start in terms of the definition of what actually is creativity. So I'm going to pass that over to Hamish. As a working creative, you know, we're all creative of some sort. Yeah, how do you feel about a statement like that?
Obviously, I don't particularly like it. I guess if he's talking about not accretive to growth in his own organisation, really, he actually goes on to say that creativity is actually central and that it's much more diverse now. So I think maybe what he's saying is creativity in the sort of old sense of simple campaigns and so on, sort of content based. Hasn't been accretive to growth for his organisation, but in reality, there's, you know, agencies are way more diverse now. Like if I look at our own organisation, it's very much data, technology, experience, and so on. So, yeah. But any of our clients are still looking for us to stitch that together with creativity. They're looking for creativity to be central to that.
Do you think it's at the core of what we do then, at the heart of it?
I think it is. I mean, I look at any of the CMOs that we deal with. I mean, I can't think of one of them that wouldn't want us to show up with the most creative work that we can that's right for their business.
Okay, yeah. Interesting. Katie, as a strategist, you probably have a bit of a different sort of perspective on this, not opinion. So what's your view about creativity and the kind of mix of agency and what we do?
Look, I think that there is that difference between creativity and creative, and both are really valuable. And there's obviously the value we need to put on creative, the output, what that looks like, but there's also the value we need to put on creativity of thinking and how that can permeate an entire business. And it should be, we should all be kind of in the culture of creativity. And that is not to take away from the individual expertise of a creative creating work. But like you said, that if it's creativity of thought in how an experience comes to life or how you might diversify a client's portfolio for them, that still should be valued as creativity.
Okay, that's an interesting perspective. It's something I'd like to kind of move into, really. And Laura, what's your view on this? And obviously you're at the coal face of valuing and you know, getting people to pay for creativity as we speak. So it'd be interesting to know what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of themes I think we've already covered, but the idea that we've got a very you know, narrow view sometimes of creativity, and we associate it quite strongly with creatives coming up with creative advertising campaigns. And obviously I've building a business on the idea that creativity is much broader than that in terms of the canvas that we have to work with, and in fact should be working with, in order to really meaningfully reach consumers. I think the other challenge that we've got that's sort of linked to that is that we're not necessarily in the business of selling creativity. Creativity is a means to what we sell, which is results. And I think that you know, when we put too much of the emphasis on creativity being the thing that we sell, we maybe undermine actually what someone is buying.
Okay.
It's the means to the end.
Exactly. Yeah. I think you said it. I mean, we were talking the other day about, I think it was your quote. It's the if you know, effectiveness is the outcome, then creativity is the strategy.
That's right.
That.
Yeah.
So do you think that therefore we need to be, as an industry, changing the conversation and changing the way we define what we do?
I think when we're talking to clients about the value that we add, we need to frame it in what the benefit of that is for them, and the benefit for that is growth. And I think once you start to talk about what we do as delivering growth to businesses, the value of it automatically becomes greater than if we talk about what we're selling to them as creativity. Because I think you said it in your introduction, creativity without commerce is as lovely as it is, isn't going to pay the bills. And so I think there is a need for us to change the language, certainly at a kind of when we're talking about to procurement and we're talking at a board level about the work that we do, we need to have a much greater emphasis on what that will deliver. I think internally in our businesses, we absolutely have to keep a culture of creativity at the heart of what we do and create an environment for that kind of thinking to happen, because the difference between, I think, good marketing and not very good marketing is how creatively, you know, across all of those things that Katie was talking about, how well we apply creativity to it.
Can I add something?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
I think there's just a way more shared understanding now between clients and agencies about the role of creativity, and I kind of credit the Byron Sharps and the Mark Ritsons and the System Ones and all of those sort of organisations that have looked at the I guess the data behind it, and every single one of them agrees, you know, even, you know, university professor.
Yeah.
Effectively, one of the big things that was so interesting out of that whole How Brands Grow thing was that big, impactful, sort of culturally resonant ideas have huge value, and that's what we should all be chasing. So I feel like there's not necessarily a battle between agencies and clients about whether things should be creative. I think everyone understands that they should be. It's then about whether it's relevant to their business and their audience, and then the debate. So in a way, there's aspects of the debate that have gone.
Right.
And the debate now is about the quality of the creative and is it right, which I think is a really healthy healthy place to be.
Okay.
And it's also considering who we're having the discussion with, because as we mentioned, I agree, the CMOs get it, etc., but it's then how they talk to their stakeholders at a board level about the value of that brand, that creativity, and what it's doing for their overall business, and how we as agencies can help arm them with that narrative, help arm them with, you know, those real business metrics, not the vanity metrics, but the business metrics that will move the dial for them, so that that kind of ties it all together for the board who are also making those decisions, or the CEO.
Yeah, and I think the understanding of that at that board level is quite varied. Like, I think it was the CFO of P&G who came out saying that as we kind of come into recessionary times, we're going to go heavy on brand because he understood the value of it.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant.
I think it's not evenly distributed across. You know, I think CMOs, personally, my experience, I don't think there's any question about it. I think they and agencies are really aligned, but it's at that other level that it varies. Yeah. Mm.
I think that's a good point. I think for every CMO that comes out and says that, there's other people who see marketing as a cost, right? They see it as a cost center rather than a profit center. Yeah. Do you think, and maybe I'll put this one to you, Katie, that do you think that we really value ourselves as much as we should do as an industry? And I think, you know, we were talking earlier about this, and it's, you know, other hours-based or output-based industries would never essentially give stuff away for free, take their best ideas to the pitch, et cetera, without knowing they're going to get the work. Do you think we need a fundamental shift in the way that we actually present ourselves to clients and the relationship with them?
Look, I think that, and I'm a Pollyanna, anyone who knows me, I always see everything glass half full. I think we just need to continue to have a lot of pride in what we do and celebrate what we actually bring to the economy and what we bring to brands and what we bring to business. And I think we sometimes maybe underplay that. You know, I was reading a paper from BCAR or something, the Bureau of Communications and Arts and Regional Research. It was actually really interesting, though. But they talked about the fact that creativity and culture boost the economy and that it contributed $122.3 billion in 1920. And it kind of wrapped around our industry as well and talked about how important we are to that. And so I think sometimes it's just reminding ourselves and bringing the pride and celebrating what we are contributing and elevating our discussion to what we have as a broader impact on the economy and the world around us. And, you know, you only have to look at some of the recent Cannes or if these, all of those great award entries to see that we can help shape cultures and help shape policy. And so I think that value we need to really make sure we continue to talk to.
I mean, I think it's the elephant in the room pitching, isn't it, in this in our
I think
industry.
It is, yeah.
So we kind of have to address it head on. I think that we, you know, certainly it doesn't help us in terms of valuing what we do, that we give it away for free in the way that we do. And I can't think of another professional services that would do that, you know, that would give away their best IP for nothing. So
why do we do it then?
I mean, look, I think, you know, it is what it is. I don't think it's going to change radically, but I do start to see some change. And I don't know whether this is universal, but I do think that there is starting to become a better understanding that pitch processes need to be fairer, that it is possible to select an agency based on chemistry, relationship, capabilities, case studies, and that we don't need to do fully, you know, full pitches all of the time to. And I think ultimately, if agencies were just more willing to say no collectively, then that behaviour would change. So, like, I mean, I think about other, when I've tried to procure professional services, the idea that I would get those for nothing. I can't think of an industry that
I think you said, you know, you don't get five builders around and come and make a wall and decide.
Well, I mean, years ago, I renovated my house and an architect did the plans, and he didn't say, I'll do the plans for free, and you can get three of my mates to do it, and you can pick the one you like, and then you can pay me to build it. I mean, that's.
No.
So I think that's the extreme end of pitching, and I think we have to just acknowledge that that is has a number of challenges to it, not least that it's making agencies, you know, it's an unsustainable practice for the health of the people working in agencies and, you know, ultimately for the margin. And I think at some point along the way, we've it's sort of almost like no one wants to talk about the fact that we need to make money as an industry and as businesses in order to be able to invest in things that matter, like training, development, diversity, all of the things that we care
which we
about.
Talk about all the time.
We talk about all the time, but they require investment. And if we are constantly undercutting ourselves by giving our work away, we're going to struggle to really make progress on some of those issues. So, but look, as I said, I do see it changing, and I, you know, I do hope that that trend continues.
And you, I mean, you staff an agency to serve the clients that you have,
right?
Okay. So when a pitch comes in, where's that time going to come from?
Yeah,
it has to come from outside that time. So essentially. Essentially, any new client has to understand that when another pitch comes up, you're going to be burning hours, you know, into the evening and so on, because you're serving, you know, you've staffed the agency.
Exactly, based to the hour, yeah.
To the hour, based on FTE or whatever it might be,
So, look, I think that, as you said, elephant in the room, exactly. We know that pitching has its, you know, obviously has its upsides, but its downsides. Yeah, how do we do this? You know, how do we come together as an industry? I mean, do you think there'd be an appetite for people to turn around and go, we're not pitching? Because wouldn't somebody else just come in and sweep it all up at that point?
I think they probably would. And I don't know. I mean, to me, that happens, that it would have to happen at a you know, advertising council kind of level.
One for Tony Hamm.
I do know. I mean, the MFA did it with the AANA and just talked about, from a media point of view at the time, what were best standard pitch behaviours that clients signed up for as well and understood.
So that was clients and agencies.
Clients and agencies.
Fantastic,
sort of coming together. And again, nothing's ever going to be perfect, but it was a and it was a long process, but it was exactly that, to kind of go, here's how many briefs we think we should receive, here's how this should work out to make it more fair. So I suspect that's what you're saying is the advertising version of that.
Yeah, and that is under, exactly. I mean, that work does happen. I mean, the Advertising Council does have best practice guidelines on pitching and... And, you know, and I think a lot of agencies do say no. And I think a lot of really good agencies say no, a lot.
Really?
So I wouldn't imagine for a second that the top agencies in town are just wildly pitching, you know, for everything that comes through the door. I think, you know, and I think agencies have to be more selective about that. And I think it's really about making sure that the ask is commensurate with the prize.
Yeah.
And there are some prizes that are absolutely massive, and there would always be significant work in tendering for huge pieces of business. But for smaller projects, I think agencies are getting better at saying no.
Or we'll do a project or whatever it might be.
Yeah, which I personally think is, I think that is actually the answer. I think if you want to work with an agency, you can test them out on a brief.
Right,
and you'll know pretty quickly if they're the right partner for you before you
go and both people get
them, and everybody gets paid. And,
exactly.
And agencies can do their best work when they're being paid, right? They're not doing it at midnight with a tired team. They're doing it, you know.
Yeah, and it's on a real brief as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's actual
results.
So do you think that there needs to be almost a fundamental shift between the relationship between CMOs but also CEOs, etc., so there is an understanding of that power balance? Do you think that's where we could direct, you know, our attention, really?
The connection between CMOs and CEOs?
Yeah.
I guess it's... I mean, I think there is a huge move going on with CMOs, I guess, and I don't want to speak on behalf of them because it's not a role that I've been in, but my understanding is to be able to speak to the rest of the C-suite about the value of creativity and about the value of brand and so on. But I think there's a lot of work being done on that side of things.
Okay.
I think some of it's just habitual behaviour that we have allowed to happen, and therefore we train people to work like that. I don't think inherently that CEOs are going, I want to procure agencies in this particular fashion. It's that we've allowed that to be the way that agencies are procured, and therefore of course they're going to do that. You would, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
If that was an acceptable way to find your agency by getting them to do work for free, like,
we'd all do
it. I think it's really incumbent on us as an industry to work out collectively how we want to tender for business.
Okay.
Make that an industry standard.
Yeah, because I think I've spoken to a lot of people over the last couple of days, you know, the conversations, you know, how is it for you, how's the market, etc. And a lot of things that have come back to me is that, you know, we're seen as a cost. You know, we're seen as a cost rather than a growth driver. And I think that comes back to that relationship. And, you know, marketing budget gets cost in tough times. Of course, we always say the only way to get out of it is market the way through it. But we would say that.
There's also all the research in the world to suggest that.
Exactly.
All the really great research that... And I think if you intrinsically link strategy, creativity and brand together, and you see the power of all of those parts and the media where it all comes to life, when you put it all together and you can show a client that by investing in brand, particularly during an economic downturn, you're going to get greater share, you're going to end up in a better place. It's all quantifiable. Like, it's not just us saying it, it's all proven, you know, and it's not then about just the creative, it's about the outcome for their business.
Yeah, and there's not really, as far as I can see, no real dissenting voices to that. Like, it's pretty universal. Exactly. And then, again, when you've got the CFO of P&G saying it, you kind of think, well, that's worth listening to.
I think that's where you change the language, because I think if you said, I think marketing even, it sort of has a whatever baggage associated with it, but if you talk about growth, which is ultimately what marketing is designed to deliver, it would be a brave CFO that's like, I'm going to stop investing in growth. You know, so I think when you start to reframe the language, I think you start to have a different quality of conversation around what it is that we actually are there to deliver.
Okay, interesting stuff. Okay, so look, I'm conscious that, you know, a lot of these conversations are about, okay, how can we do more, what are we doing wrong, etc. But I would also like to sort of look at the positive side of things. So obviously we do things right, you know, we work in a billion dollar industry or whatever it might be. So where do you see the future of this going? Because I'm very conscious on panels like this, often there's a lot of questions, but there's not a lot of answers. So maybe I'll put it to you, Laura.
I mean, I think the biggest shift that I think we need to make is away from a head hour model.
Right.
And to at least output-based pricing.
Yeah.
I think the ultimate goal of value-based pricing, it is admirable but complex. If you think about, you know, you'd have to sort of write an FE for every piece of work to determine the value that added to the business and what percentage of that you should be remunerated for. But I think if you go where we are now, when we're selling hours, it is a limiting remuneration model that I think we need to change. And look, I mean, I say this as someone who's got a business that's 6 weeks old, so, you know, I'll wait a year
but
or two.
But you've got the opportunity to do it, right?
Well, so I say that. So I say, like, we aren't really using a head hour model.
Right.
I've worked in businesses. I was lucky enough to work at Anomaly in the US, which famously doesn't have timesheets. And as I say, it's 6 weeks old, so ask me in a year if that paid off or not. But I think we're having very good conversations with clients who are more than happy to look at output-based pricing.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, the argument to them is you shouldn't pay more because we're slow and inefficient, and you shouldn't have to worry about how we get the stuff done. You should worry that we're going to get it done. And I think when I worked in that agency for a couple of years, the conversations that we had with clients were so different, because we always talked about scope and we always talked about deliverables. Did we do the things we said we were going to do to the quality that we'd say we were going to do them? And no one ever went, yeah, but like Judy spent 4 hours more than we said she'd spend, but then Mike spent 2 hours less, so yeah, we need to...
But also,
like, those conversations are insane.
The tenure of people as well. It takes away... You might have a creative that's been there 20 years that can turn out an idea...
20 minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the impact of that idea on your business could be profound.
Mm.
They shouldn't be paid for their 20 minutes. They should be paid for their 20 years.
Exactly.
And I think that's important. And, you know, Toby Talbot, I'm stealing from him. He's the CCO of Ogilvy and Fabulous. And he's been talking to me about this idea of ROC, which is return on creativity. He's like, when are we going to create this return on creativity metric that does all those things that you've just spoken to?
I'd be interested in your guys' point of view on this, because I'm not the sort of finance guy, but we talk about distinctive brand assets, and to me, the interesting word in that is assets. So we know that having a long-term asset has a huge impact on a business and so on, and you look at other assets like photography or, you know, so on, where it gets licensed and, you know, you can get a return... Get a return on that over a long period of time. Look at the fresh food people. It's been around for 40 years and it's continuing to deliver, and it's continuing to become more valuable for Woolies. I don't know, is there something in that?
Well, this is one thing we were going to talk about, because this is the idea that we're penalising ourselves for success, right? So the better something is, it gets used once over 30 years, and as you said, everyone else is licensed. Mm-hmm. Is there an argument to have repeat licensing for creativity, for instance? I don't know. What would you guys think about that?
I like the idea of it, but I don't know if it's possible.
I mean, look, I think, like all of these things, there's sort of an ideal world, and I think it is really interesting. And if you look at models from other creative industries, that is absolutely how they manage their remuneration. And the more successful something is, the more you get paid, because the more it gets used. And I think that model is fascinating. I've yet to see anyone do it. I mean, if anyone has managed to sell that in as a way of working, it would be an interesting case study for sure. But, you know, I think where we are now is so far away from that in terms of the conversations that we're having with clients. I'd say step one would be just get us out of the world of $205 per hour for this person to spend 6 hours doing this task, and into the world of let's talk about what we actually do and create. And I think once we get that bit done, there'll be a way of going, well, what comes after that? I think it would be a hell of a switch to go from the model that we're currently all scrapping around in to that in one go. So I think it will be a journey.
But it needs to be incremental, and I think you certainly have the opinion that things are changing, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, maybe I'm just naive and in the sort of bubble of a new business that where we're able to sort of shape our destiny a little bit. But I certainly haven't had any. I think a lot of things have changed. I think the way that clients view talent has changed. I think their understanding of different agency models is changing, because they're not bothered if you're in the office together or not in the office together.
Right.
All those things that, you know, we're finding hugely advantageous for us. So I do think there is a greater understanding that we can't pitch them the way we have, and that our head hour model is actually not even to clients' benefit. And I think any client who's ever had an overages bill would probably agree.
Yeah.
You know, so I think I do see change coming. We haven't had any pushback from procurement or otherwise about any conversations around wanting to work differently. I'm quite hopeful that we're starting to make some progress on some of those conversations.
And Katie, you'd be in some of these conversations at top level with clients. I mean, do you feel that there's an understanding from both sides that maybe there's a change on the horizon? Or
I think there's definitely more open discussions with procurement about different models. And they do, like some of the things I've been exposed to where procurement is saying, could you let us know if there is a different model that we want you to fill it in this way, but if there's another way you want to structure this, we are all ears. And so, I, you know, that for me is really reassuring to hear, because other times in the past it's been like, fill this in, this is the template. Yeah. And that, whereas to hear them saying, you know, let us know if there's another way of looking at this, open to it, is brilliant. And so then it's incumbent on us to make sure we're sharing models back with
them. And come back with a solution, maybe, yeah. Which I suppose is hopefully a good start of that. We've got about 5 minutes left. I'm going to ask a couple of questions that are popping up here. Now, one of the things I said is, 2 days into this, we're not going to talk about an AI, and it's just disappeared from there. But
I saw it too.
It lost its popularity.
That's our robot overlord.
The AI filter.
Yeah, but it was an interesting one to talk about billing and hours. So if you have, you know, if a lot of those billable hours are gone through AI, which we weren't going to talk about, is that something that might actually speed that change up in terms of people, hours, and change the conversation?
As more about the output.
Yeah, it's more about the output, hours. That's right. It's about the actual, what comes out the back of it, right? I don't know.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Okay.
The AI thing's interesting. We just did a whole series of experiments with Telstra on what's the reality of what AI can do now.
And
essentially found, like, there's a lot of potential in it, but you still need a huge amount of human input to get it to what you need to do.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But that changes the, you know, an AI prompter, that changes the conversation completely, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think if I just look at that question, I mean, I feel like AI is a whole other panel we could spend ages talking about, but AI can make comps in seconds and we're charging hours for doing that. I think that's sort of the issue at the heart of the industry, right? Exactly. Is that isn't the bit we should be charging a lot of money for, because that isn't the bit that has the value. The bit that has the value is the thinking that's being...
Absolutely.
And because we're giving that away, we're sort of going, like, agencies are trying to sort of make money off things that aren't necessarily the real value of what we do and offer. So really, you know, if there's something that makes that more efficient, then agencies should be benefiting from the increased efficiency that comes with being able to do things more quickly.
Agency and client.
Yeah. Do you think that should be a shared?
Yeah, and then because the main thing is, what can AI automate for us so that we can bring our imaginations?
Do more.
That's where, you know,
that's unleashing,
that's the differentiation for us, right? Like, our imagination is what brings us apart from that. So how you can really double down on that piece.
And it would be nice to think that what it will do is help streamline some of that stuff, so that time isn't being spent agonisingly comping up ideas, is actually being spent having better ideas.
Less spreadsheets, maybe.
Yeah.
Apparently,
you turned up the spreadsheet.
You can do spreadsheets, yeah. Okay, what else have we got here? Creative effectiveness is a hot topic of creatives using current research to shape ideas. I think we kind of touched on that. I wonder if there's any particular pertinent research you wanted to bring up.
It sort of goes back to my earlier point. I think, I mean, I'm seeing lots more creatives going off and doing things like the mini MBA with, you know, the Mark Ritson thing. I've done that. I've done the brand management thing because I just want to be better at my job. And it's really about, again, taking those, the debates you don't need to have off the table, so that there's a shared understanding of what we're all trying to do and so on. I think more and more creatives are doing that. And I think it's, the whole industry is better for it.
Do you think that changes your discipline as a creative?
I like that Byron Sharp idea that that it's kind of like, if you're an architect, you need engineering. Like, you need the foundations, but the creativity comes in the architecture. So having the background and understanding of what drives effectiveness and you know, in all the different domains that we work in, and then being able to bring your creativity to that so that it's well applied for commercial outcome, I think it just simplifies the job. I mean, it's a hard enough job as it is, but it just takes certain things off the table and means there's a shared agreement when you go in to sell, you know, a particular, like a brand asset or something, everyone's talking the same language.
You both understand the parameters you're talking to, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And would that be particularly pertinent in a strategy role, I would imagine?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. And sorry, I was just thinking when you were saying quotes, there was a great quote I read on LinkedIn the other day, and I can't remember who to attribute it to, but she said something like, if you don't value creativity, then how can you expect to accrue value from creativity?
Right.
And I think that's at the heart of everything we're talking
Absolutely,
about, right, is how you make sure that all the other systems foundations around it, but you've got to value the part of the creativity that's making it magic.
Mm. You know, I feel like creativity has to sort of constantly justify its existence, but I don't really understand why, because it's so clearly a business driver. Some of if you look at the biggest organizations in the world, P&G embraces creativity, Apple embraces creativity, Google embraces creativity, they all embrace creativity, but we're still having to kind of go, oh, you know,
it's valuable.
It's valuable. Is it? Yeah.
We just define ourselves. Okay, we just got just over a minute left. Thanks for the questions, everybody. Everybody was anonymous apart from one person, Tim Burrows. Surprisingly.
No, he did that. He did one anonymous one.
And as they're he always does, questions. Ask the prickly question at the end. When are we going to be brave enough to ditch timesheets, guys?
Well, I don't do them, so I, oh, we don't we do go. Them. That's so I'm like, yeah. But, you know, as I said, I think you also talked about scale, doing that at scale. So but as I said, I've worked in a very successful business that didn't have timesheets, and once the clients understood that that's not how remuneration conversations are going to happen, it just clears up a load of admin and reporting. And let's be honest, we all know timesheets aren't the most reliable way of keeping track of time anyway. So I think those conversations are happening, and I haven't done a timesheet since I started my business, so
good.
We'll see how long I can maintain that. I'll let you know.
All right, keep it that way. Okay, well, we're just about out of time. Thank you all for your time. Thank you. It's been a great conversation, really enjoyable. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thanks for your questions.
Thank you for listening to Uncommon Thinking, an Advertising Week podcast. For more content like this, or to learn about Advertising Week's world-leading events for the advertising, marketing, and technology industries, visit www.advertisingweek.com.